Our next case for argument is Williams v. Rodriguez. Mr. Fox.
Good morning, Your Honors. Ed Fox for the plaintiff appellant. We're here from a grant of a summary judgment in favor of the defendants on two claims, one for a false arrest for a DUI, basically, and the other for a deliberate indifference claim to serious medical needs. The first thing I want to briefly address is the false arrest claim, and in doing that, I'm going to assume that most of the bases for the district court's opinion are not going to be addressed by the court here because the defendants don't do that as well. They don't adopt any of the view of the district court. So I'm going to go to the one issue which I believe is the most important issue, and it goes to the credibility in connection of the officer versus my client in connection with whether or not he smelled alcohol in my client's breath. And the evidence on this is that when the officer stopped my client and asked my client if he was drinking, my client said no, he wasn't drinking, he didn't have anything to drink. That's in the 56-1 statement. That's what it is. That's what we rely on. What happened was the defense, the lower court and the defense from that said that was somehow not a denial that he could be smelling alcohol on his breath, and therefore the officer is to be believed that he smelled alcohol on my client's breath. And I would just submit, Your Honors, that if my client says in response to a question that he has not been drinking, a reasonable inference from the statement that he has not been drinking is that he had no alcohol on his breath. And in fact, if you look at the flip side of that inference, which is that if my client did have alcohol and really had alcohol in his breath, it would be reasonable to assume that he had been drinking. The defendants would be entitled to that inference. We want to be entitled to the inference, the contrary inference, and that's all what this case is about on the false arrest claim. Two other points is the district court disregards the lockup keeper's report. The lockup keeper said he didn't suspect my client to be in his preprinted form, did not suspect my client to be under the influence. The district court decided to disregard that for reasons that aren't clear to me. The defendant said that report shouldn't be wasn't properly authenticated, but it not only was authenticated properly, but also in the lower court, the defendants admitted to its content. And the report itself. When we made that a 56.1 statement, they admitted to it. So it can't be here an issue any longer. And finally, with respect to the arrest, there were two other. The lawyers for the defendants created a second reason for the arrest being that it was an illegal stop on a highway. They didn't put any evidence in to show it was an illegal stop. The record is devoid of that. But in any case, my client's evidence is. He was stopped at 2 a.m. A black man with his brother was stopped at 2 a.m. on the highway. He put his hazard lights on. He was having an asthma attack, and it was an emergency stop. That's the only evidence. If you look at the statute, you compare it to what he testified to and what the evidence is, that is not a crime. In any case, the defendant never gave him a ticket for that, but that was what the lawyers created after the fact. The other possible crime that he could have been arrested for was obstruction of traffic. It was 2 o'clock in the morning. My client said there was no traffic around to be obstructed. The defendant, Rodriguez, said there were two cars behind him. That's a genuine issue of material fact. Even if there were two cars behind him, we're talking about Lakeshore Drive, and my client was undisputedly at the curb. He's not obstructing any traffic by anybody's testimony on that issue. It was just wrong, and the district court was just off base on everything else virtually it said on this issue of the false arrest.
There is no dispute that your client had some difficulty with the field sobriety tests.
Right, that's disputed as well. My client was having told the officer he was not feeling well. In fact, I believe the officer admits to that. My client completed the finger-to-nose test, and then the officer claimed that my client was only able to keep his foot up in the air 15 seconds as opposed to 30 seconds, and then the officer testified my client swayed when he did the heel-to-walk test. My client said he was trembling, but he wasn't swaying. The officer said he took 10 steps instead of 9. So that was...
Mr. Fox, I appreciate you don't have a lot of time. I want to move on to the deliberate indifference because, to me, that perhaps is a greater concern. Now, was this at all advanced to be analyzed under the Fourth Amendment below?
No.
Was there some reason why it wasn't?
It was claimed in the complaint, and the law establishing this as a Fourth Amendment claim came out in the midst of all the briefing.
Right.
And I overlooked it. And frankly, that's...
That's it.
That's what happened to me, and I overlooked it. There was a new case that came out in the midst of the briefing. And
you could submit that to us, you know, by way of supplemental authority.
I could, except it did come out. Well, there was a case submitted by way of supplemental authority by the defendants on that issue.
But Lopez was decided while you were in the district court.
Yes, Lopez was decided while we were in the district court as well.
Why did you say that he'd gone to the emergency room when he didn't go to the emergency room?
I didn't understand us to say that. He went to the hospital.
You said in your brief that he'd gone to the emergency room.
If I did, then I misspoke.
Did. Right, okay.
He did not. He went the day later.
The VA hospital.
Yeah. Correct. And if I did that, I apologize. I misspoke on that issue.
Pre-existing appointment.
He had a pre-existing appointment in which they did deal with asthma issues. And if I could just say, all the officer needed to do was give him his inhaler. He was having trouble breathing. The officer knew he needed an inhaler. And that's all he had. And he had an inhaler. His brother and his wife brought one down, and he had one from his pocket. That's all he needed to do. And I see my time is up.
Okay, thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Fox. Ms. Witcher?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. This morning, I will focus on his federal claims, as that is seems to be the concern here. There are three offenses for which there was probable cause. DUI...
Well, wait a minute. That's the concern of, as expressed by counsel. The only expressed concern you've got here is from one judge on deliberate indifference, right? We don't have a lot of time. I'd rather... Unless the other judges want to struggle with the arrest issue, I'd rather talk about this inhaler problem.
Okay. Here we're asking that the application of the Fourth Amendment be considered waived because it wasn't raised, although in the complaint, was never pressed in the district court, was not pressed in the opening brief, and even though we noted it in our brief, was not pressed in the reply brief, and not until the supplemental authority letter which we submitted did Mr. Williams' counsel ask that the Fourth Amendment be applied. But we believe that even if the Fourth Amendment is applied or the 14th, here where there was no outward obvious signs of needing immediate medical care, that under either standard, what occurred here was reasonable or was not deliberately indifferent.
You believe that the wife coming to the station with the extra inhaler and asking that be handed, and none of that being transpired? I mean, wasn't coming with a weapon.
No, to be sure.
Really,
he had an inhaler on him, so that was inventoried, and if he needed it, he had one there. His wife and brother did come with the extra inhaler and inform them of his asthma, but still back in the processing area, he was not expressing, except for one time, that this might have been something. When he was asked to take the breathalyzer test, he said, I can't breathe. I have asthma. I would need medicine to be able to blow into the machine. Other than that, he did not exhibit any signs of having...
At that point, did he have his inhaler with him, or had it been removed?
No, it had been inventoried, so he didn't have it on his person.
Did he ask for it?
He didn't specifically ask for it. He said,
He just said he couldn't breathe into the breathalyzer, but he didn't ask for his inhaler.
That's correct, not specifically. And his testimony was, I can't breathe. To blow into the machine, I would need my medication.
I thought there was some testimony that during that 4 or 5 hour period before they gave him the inhaler that his wife brought to the station, that he was calling from the cell the inhaler.
His wife and brother came while he was being processed, which was a different time period than when he was in the lockup. And just to be clear, Officer Rodriguez was not, after he took him to the lockup, was not involved in this. So really there's no proper defendant for that claim, for the federal claim, because he never amended his complaint to name who that lockup keeper was. So that piece of the federal issue falls away here. But other than that, he was in the lockup.
Doesn't the suit charge an unknown and unnamed Chicago police officer?
Yes.
Isn't it fair reading of that must be the lockup keeper?
Right, but under Section 1983, he needed to name that person because it's premised on the idea of personal liability no vicarious.
Well, he didn't amend his complaint after he discovered who it was, right?
Right, and the record actually doesn't reflect who that was either. So there's nothing for us even to be able to name him. His signature on the lockup keeper report is unreadable too. So we just don't have that information.
So he didn't depose. He didn't or submit an interrogatory that would have identified the lockup keeper. Is that what you're saying?
Correct, and that's partly why.
But he didn't. Is that right?
That this document, it's not really authentic. We don't know at this, given our record, you know, who filled out that report. Just to reiterate, under any of these standards, what happened here was reasonable, not deliberately indifferent. And as to all four claims, we would ask that you affirm the judgment of the district court.
Okay, well, thank you very much, and thank you to Mr. Fox.